Money FM 89.3, best of drive time. Culture Club.
Money FM 89.3, good afternoon. It is drive time. I'm Elliot Danker. It's time now for Culture Club. Let's talk about water utilities. You know, it accounts for about 2% of global greenhouse gas emissions. And believe it or not, it is about the same as the world's shipping industry. Yeah, the world's growing population needs more water, and it's not just for drinking. Things like sanitation, cleanliness, food production, removal of waste products. The demands on supply are ever-growing, and the delivery and treatment of water and wastewater requires a great deal of energy, so that results in large amounts of GHG emissions. And to meet growing demand, existing water networks will need to be upgraded and new facilities need to be created. So how can water operators transform to achieve the industry's ambitious goal to be net zero by 2030? And let's look at Singapore. What can we do to invest in sustainable water? That's a term of the day. In the studio with me is Dr. Beverly Stinson, who is Global Water President for AECOM. Dr. Beverly, so nice to be able to speak with you in person. How are you?
Such a pleasure to be here, Elliot.
Wow, this is quite a broad topic that we've got to cover. So I suppose let's get to know AECOM. I understand it's an American multinational infrastructure consulting firm. Tell us a little bit about it.
And so we're really a global firm. Much as we started life and our headquarters was in the United States, we work in 150 countries around the world and are generally a full infrastructure firm. We do everything from transportation, aviation, buildings and places, environment, wow. and of course water and program management.
Yes. So, I've seen the logo quite a bit. And then to relate it to Singapore, you guys are the consulting firm behind Keppel Marina East Desalination Plant in Singapore. But we are going to talk about water or sustainable water. That's an interesting one. Could you give us, I suppose, to start us off, a bit of an overview of Asia's water landscape? What do you see here?
Yes, so Asia is an extremely interesting part of the world when it comes to water. And, of course, with the population explosions that we're seeing across Asia, and to give you some metric on that, we believe that between Africa and Asia, about 80% of the world's population will live in these areas in 2100. And so it's really not only a growth in population, but an urbanization. So we're seeing about 75% of the population living in urban areas, moving to urban areas. It's currently 40. So we're going to see a big cluster of people in a small space all having increased demands because as we become a middle economy or a higher level economy, we not only want more water, but food and energy. And that's all related back to the type of work that we do in water. Okay. And so I think there's a lot that water can bring together on that water, energy, food nexus, in fact. And so I think Asia has a lot of interesting times ahead of it, and coupled with climate change, even sea level rise. So these things are all the issues that related to water that I think we hope to help with, in fact.
Actually, mentioning all of that, I started to think places like Vietnam or even how in Indonesia they're changing the capital. Would these be this topic of concern that we were discussing?
Yes, I think all across Asia, the major cities that are coastal, for example, are concerned about potential flooding. And I think this is something that, in fact, Singapore is a global leader on and looking very closely at how it can protect its shores without losing land, but also while being aesthetically pleasing and still giving access to the beauty of the ocean. And extremely thoughtful in how they approach this with the nature-based solutions as well as green and grey kind of solutions.
Slightly left field, Dr. Beverly, would a country like the Netherlands or Amsterdam be something worth looking at, considering they are technically below sea level?
You're quite right. Yes, in fact, indeed. And other places across the globe, we put in a big barrage in the Thames in London, and currently Hong Kong is looking at barrage, right, to protect its coastal areas. And yes, the Netherlands and Denmark, we take lessons learned from across the globe and apply them.
For sure, especially with the climate changes, as you mentioned earlier on. I suppose, how is Asia coping with this scarcity of water? I mean, what do these strategies look like if we were to compare it to Singapore? I mean, you talked about Hong Kong building a barrage. Yeah. Any other case studies, perhaps?
Yeah, so I think I'll start with how I feel like Singapore has a very holistic approach on its water management. Mm-hmm. And we, in fact, work on one of your other programs, which is water management island-wide or city-statewide with Singapore PUB as part of a program called DTSS2. And that has led to the development of the new water facilities in Tuas and the expansion of new water facilities in Changi and consideration of the upgrade and expansion of new water facilities in Kranji. And so I think the approach in Singapore is very wise. It's conserve, number one. Number two, use the water that you have, whether it be rainwater or reuse water, use that. Then you can import. And of course, desalination, as you mentioned, the Keppel Bay, the Marina East desalination facility that we worked along with Keppel and Singapore PUB to develop, which is a very resilient, leaves you weather independent as well. So that gives you a lot of resiliency in your water planning. And across Asia, I think we're going to see an increase in this particular strategy, capturing more rainwater, treating it, storing it, reusing it. Every drop is precious. And it's so critical to our economies.
I can imagine this rainwater strategy can be a bit tricky with the issue of climate change and how we're seeing different levels of rainwater coming at different times of the year. How is that looking like as far as you guys are concerned?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting one because just this morning at the moment, Singapore is hosting the International Water Week.
Yes.
And we talked about a project that we have ongoing in New York City, which is called Cloudburst.
Okay.
And very similar situation that you see torrential rain in a short, intensified period of time that can lead to quite damaging flooding. And so we're beginning to link and predict a lot of this. We connected up with the Weather Channel and we predict within small blocks even how much rainfall and how to manage that and how to plan for it. And I think this is the kind of thing that many cities around the world have to do. Many cities have seen torrential rain beyond their history has ever seen. San Francisco and across most of the countries, Australia, likewise. So we're seeing this all over the globe with climate change. So the planning for capture and conveyance without flooding is something very important, especially to agencies that care deeply about the well-being of their communities. And certainly that enters into our thought process in many cities across the world where we find that those low-level flood-prone areas are really the areas that the wealthy don't live in. And so we have to be careful and be mindful that our duty is to protect our communities in that regard.
It's very hard, right, especially with humans and how demanding we are out of this pandemic. Now, people demand more events. People demand to travel more. But hey, you know, climate change has been ongoing. We're trying to slow it down and people tend to... Would it be correct for me to say manipulate the weather with cloud seeding? Have you guys discussed this? And I know it's slightly off topic, but is this something worth being concerned about? Our demand for good weather for events?
Well, I think there are those that are ambitious enough to think that they could have some control over the weather.
Okay.
But I'm not sure that's going to happen in the near future.
Yeah.
So I think our wisest strategy is to be prepared.
Sure.
And to have our strategies around resiliency and protection of our communities and to be prepared for these events. And I think that's it actually can be, in a water-scarce environment, a great asset to be able to capture and treat. And we talk about that, for instance, in LA, where they're facing the greatest drought in 20 plus years. And I just spoke with the general manager of LA DWP, and he was saying that, you know, we used to try to separate our stormwater and get it out of the city as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Now we desperately need that water. Yeah. And so we have to rethink as one water, as one holistic, close the water cycle and also close the carbon cycle.
Yeah.
And that's the way to address our future in sustainable environments and to begin to curb the change on climate.
Yeah. Oh, pardon me, Eliana. slightly diving into Hollywood territory there with controlling weather. But I am in the studio right now with Dr. Beverly Simpson, who is Global Water President for AECOM. Dr. Beverly, we talked about water technology, something I'm very proud of as a Singaporean, the fact that we have this thing called New Water. But what are your thoughts on this, and how is Singapore advancing in water technology? How can it help the rest of the world?
Oh, Singapore is really a global leader, and you ought to be proud. The work that has been accomplished here has really set a standard across the globe. And I think, of course, great innovation is led out of great need, and your leadership here has really thought deeply about this and has spent a great deal of research and time with the global support, and has really set a blueprint for many communities across the globe. So they continue to do research, and we're very pleased to be engaged with Singapore PUB on this, because they truly are global leaders, and we see a lot of exchange of good ideas, looking at less energy intensive ways of achieving this, which is a very important aspect, less energy intensive ways of having desalination facilities available for those dry and drought stricken periods of time, and also not only that, there's setting the vision of, as I said, closing the carbon cycle.
Yeah.
How can we reduce the greenhouse gas emissions? Because it's not just carbon from energy, it's also nitrous oxide and methane. So capturing and sequestering carbon dioxide also. So thinking about all of these scientific approaches, Singapore very much has all of this at the front of mind.
Yeah.
And while we may not talk about it every day, they are really leading the charge in many areas on this. And it's a joy to be a part of something significant.
So many aspects to it. I mean, especially having these conversations. And tonight, if I choose to have a steak, I start to think twice. It's happened to me. Gosh. But Dr. Beverly, we do have a goal to be net zero by 2030. Your thoughts on this, what operators can do in terms of transforming the industry, I suppose, to get there? What are the gaps that are left to be filled? I mean, I know you mentioned earlier on, there is this issue about coasts, sea coasts, that could also play a part in it.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, the meeting the net zero, you know, this comes down to a couple of approaches, as I said. It's reduce the energy, it's recovering more energy. And the wonderful thing about what we consider, we often refer to as used water, is just water with other wonderful, valuable assets in it, such as carbon.
Mm-hmm.
And so carbon is the basis for energy production. And when we intensify and maximize our opportunity to recover that carbon as energy and to recover the nitrogen and the phosphorus as fertilizers for food, it helps us move forward with, as we said, closing the carbon cycle, as well as addressing the need for food independence. And that's something else that the water team can really help with. The other pieces are, as we talked about, the nitrous oxide and the methane.
Yeah.
And that also brings us that we can use these also for energy. But an interesting part of what's emerging, of course, is as we have this energy transition across the globe, is how much water plays a part in that, in the production of hydrogen as an energy source. Hydrogen can be produced by splitting the water atom, H2O, right?
Yeah.
So you get a really high quality, high density energy source from electrolysis of water. And as we move forward, we're going to find the demand for water increase even further.
Yeah.
Because stoichiometrically, we need about 9 cubic meters of water for every cubic meter of hydrogen.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a very water-intensive process. So on our transition, our energy transition, water plays a key role. And as we move forward, we have to think also about how we can help to close our carbon cycle by actually using the water that's available to us, be it from the ocean or from our water reuse or from our rainwater. So we have a lot of opportunity to play a big part in all of this.
Technology, a big equalizer in that sense. Just a final question, just a quick thoughts on this, Dr. Beverly. I mean, we were talking about technology and how you close that loop as well. Talent to accomplish this? How big a problem is it?
Well, there are never enough really great, talented engineers. But thankfully, as we see across the globe, and that's the great joy, I have to tell you, about working for a global company, because we never sleep. We work 24 hours around the globe and have access to some of the greatest minds. And it's not just in any one company. The collaboration that you'll find in the water sector is significant. Yeah. Collaboration with universities, with think tanks. We have such great support globally on coming up with great ideas. And trust me, there are enough good engineers to make this happen. And so, yes, we would like a lot more engineers. But I think the other side of it is when we begin to run out of human talent, we can resort and have resorted and are moving to digital sure. solutions, trying to do many more things digitally, digital twins for operation of our facilities, the planning and design. We can digitize a great deal of the very repetitive. So that leaves our talented engineers free to think about greater and higher goals. And so, yes, I think we're helped along the way by not only our global network, but the ability to move to a digital platform.
I've been speaking with Dr. Beverly Stinson, who is Global Water President for AECOM. Dr. Beverly, really appreciate you being in the studio with us. Take care and have a great week ahead.
Thank you so much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.